how do you take something that's popular elsewhere and then put it into your own unique spin? And my unique spin is professor at university. And so that's always a very effective strategy.
All right, welcome to ThoughtWave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for entrepreneurs, audience builders, and people who just want to do shit. I'm joined here with Aaron Dinnan.
What kind of shit are we doing? Wait, hold on. What does that encompass?
I think we're going to help people figure out how to make more money in their business.
Okay. It's not all about the money, Chris. It's about solving problems.
Well, you know, Aaron, mentor of mine used to say, when you're in business, you want to make sure that whatever it is you're doing, you do whatever is closest to the money first.
A mentor of mine used to say, listen, the only thing that you can be sure of if you're successful is that you're going to get sued and you're going to get audited by the IRS. So when those things happen, just think of it as, hey, I'm successful because nobody sues someone who isn't successful.
That's an interesting point.
I was sitting with him and like his lawyer came in and he had to do some paperwork real quick. And, you know, and then he explained he was getting sued. And I was like, oh man, I'm so sorry. He's like, no one would be suing me if I wasn't running something successful. So, you know, I'm going to consider it a sign that I did something right somewhere. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I remember I was running a startup company and we got our first cease and desist letter because we were advertising, you know, using their name or something like that. Yeah. And yeah, we reframed it as this was a big win. This was, yeah.
It's a lot like social media. So I have this post on social media right now that's going wildly viral. It's got like 15, 16 million views past, you know, 4 or 5 days. Oh, wow. And some of those views aren't so friendly. Some of the comments are, you know, about how I should be fired or, you know, I'm ruining the world or whatever it is. And it's like, well, the reason I'm getting those is because, you know, when you got something that reaches 16 million people, well, even if only like 5% of those people don't like it, what is 5% of 16 million? That's 800,000. Wow. That's 800,000. That's a lot of people, and they all have access to the comment section. So the idea that even if only 5% didn't like something, which is probably like a really big win, like that's still almost a million people who are going to sit there and say, you know, you should be fired, you're a terrible human being. So again, there's no such thing as a universal good. And, you know, even if I just posted pictures of adorable puppies, like at some level of scale, someone's going to accuse me of abusing animals. So it's a win in that sense that, you know, that it means you're reaching people.
All right, so I'm so interested by this. Okay, so what did you do in order to, first of all, have a post that took off like that? I mean, that's wild. I'm sure the audience builders and entrepreneurs listening are going to want to know, like, what is working with that? And second, I want to hear a little bit about, like, you know, it takes a lot of personal resilience to have those comments be thrown at you. Like, how do you deal with that?
Oh, yeah. You like, clench up a little. Every time you get a comment, you're like, oh, God, what is this person going to say? So your first question, I think, is the important question of, you know, okay, what did you do to create a piece of content that does that? I teach and I have my students. And so a fun style of content that I'll do is, you know, it's kind of like a man on the street style interview thing, but I can do it with my students. So I can just go and ask them a random question, and their reactions, responses, you know, tend to be, you know, interesting to people because it's very unusual for, you know, someone who's, you know, teaching a university level class to engage with students like that and post on social media. And, you know, and it's also very relatable. Like, I always try to get a very relatable question to students because it's such a broad audience, right? Just about everyone has been a student at some point in time. So you can always relate to it. And so, yeah, so those are some key elements, right? It's, you know, doing something kind of in a unique environment that people are familiar with, but putting it in kind of your own environment is kind of the unique thing you have access to. One of my clients actually this morning noticed he has a TikTok up. He's an NBA player. And I saw him doing a viral TikTok trend on social media. I saw him doing it like at practice with his team. I'm not going to say who this is. But you know, I saw him doing this kind of, it was kind of actually a little bit of an old trend, but he was doing it, and you know, and it's going wild because, like, oh my gosh, here are NBA players, you know, my favorite NBA players doing this trend. So, you know, it's how do you, I call it verticalizing a trend, right? How do you take something that's popular elsewhere and then put it into your own unique spin? And my unique spin is, hey, I'm a professor at university. And so that's always a very effective strategy. I've been rambling for a while, but I'll answer your second question. Let me get to part two, which is how do you deal with the So a lot of people, I don't turn off my comment. I leave notifications on from Instagram. So that, like, when I get a comment, I get notified. And everyone's like, why do you do that? Especially other creators who have built big audiences. Like, how do you tolerate that? And I always justify it. I say, well, it's how I know something hit. Because when I start getting when something's really hitting, every 30 seconds, you'll get a buzz for like days. And it's just wild. And then you'll look down and, you know, and that's where I usually judge sentiment, right? You know, if I have a good like 50-50 split of people saying, this is awesome, this is amazing, and this is horrible, you're dying, I hope you die. That's usually a really good sign. And I know 50-50 doesn't seem like it's good, but you got to remember that the vast majority of people who are going to comment are going to be the ones with outrage. And so the fact that there's a lot of people with positive responses usually means there's orders of magnitude more positive responses than negative. So that's kind of a good gauge. And then especially when the positive people start to defend you. If you post a piece of content, there's a lot of people defending you against the hate. Again, you can feel pretty good that, I put something out here that's comfortable. And then, and then the last thing I throw out there is you got to remember that a lot of this content is... A lot of the hate, a lot of the comments are, I don't want to just be like, it's bots, it's fake, it's bad, but there are people out there who intentionally so distrust and mistrust, sure, on these platforms, or just like to pick, just like to create fights. And the way I know this is true, right, it's not me just, you know, kind of justifying my own actions, is my daughter posts on social media, or not my daughter, we have an account, she's an ambassador for Children's Miracle Network, thinking about healthcare. Oh, wow. She's an eight-year-old girl thinking about, you know, teaching people about heart health. She has a heart condition and is very public about it. And so we posted this, she got this viral video of like why AED should be in school, defibrillators, and the importance of that. And
those it's got millions. You know, you use to shock people back alive if their heart stops.
Yeah, they save people's lives, right? You get a defibrillator on someone who has a cardiac event and you will save their life. So they should be everywhere. People should know how to use them. And that's pretty much what this post is doing, is advocating for defibrillators in schools to save kids' lives. And you know, there's overwhelmingly good comments, but there are people commenting on that video saying, I hope you die of a heart attack. To an 8-year-old, to an 8-year-old girl.
That. Boo! Oh,
it's wild. Anyway, that's so I'm gonna hop off the soapbox here.
That's the worst. Yeah, crazy? There's a lot of vitriol and bullshit out there on these platforms,
wild.
Right?
It's wild.
But it seems like, you know, they're also being used to build some pretty massive communities. So I'm guessing, as a part of her advocacy for this, the condition is becoming more well known. Money is being raised of some sort, right? Like, is that what's going on?
Yeah. And this is one of just the interesting things that happened on the internet. Everyone always talks about how the internet and the web and social media are destroying the world. And you know what it is? It's just, I think of it like a plane crash, right? So that's a weird. Hey. Bear with me. This metaphor is going somewhere.
Thought wave.
That was I got a thought wave. I'm gonna complete the thought wave. Let's ride this thought wave to the end.
Be careful.
When a plane crashes, a horrible tragedy, and that gets all the news coverage, and you would think that planes must crash all the time, but the reality is like air travel is safer than it's ever been in human history, and we never talk about the millions of people who fly and don't die in fiery plane crashes. And and I think this is the internet, the web is that scaled up, right? Because you've got billions, not millions, like millions is a lot, billions is unfathomably huge. You got billions of people using these platforms. So yeah, of course negative things are going to happen, but they're more rare. I'm not saying they're rare within scope, because there's so much good that comes out of these platforms in social media. So one of the first things that happens when social media starts to form, and like early social media, like the late 1970s, again, before even the web exists, like Usenet, which is like Reddit without the pictures. And so what happens is these communities start to form around orphan diseases and rare diseases. And that's where people start to exchange information. You know, maybe you're in a rural community, you don't have access to the top researcher, but now like you can actually hear, you know, state-of-the-art treatments, learn about them, your doctor can, or you can. They build communities and, you know, they raise money. The diseases have been cured thanks to Facebook groups and raising money on Facebook. Like, and nobody talks about this stuff, but there are hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of health communities. These platforms save lives. So anyway, another show.
I mean, just like, I agree with this, and there's a lot of amazing positive impact that seems like happening. I mean, right now, if you're listening to this today, this is the time frame where Hurricane Helene hit just this past weekend. And North Carolina has never seen this level of destruction, at least in anybody's lifetimes that is going through this. I mean, whole towns washed away. whole towns washed away. And, you know, as we're looking at this, the community response on social media, just the immediate action, like, you know, this podcast is about people who want to do shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people are just doing shit. Yeah. They are raising money. I saw there's a local community co-working space here that got pallets and pallets of supplies already together just through motivating their community. And they're driving a lot of this through these online communities to get awareness out and to tell people what's needed, what's not needed too. You know, a lot of people are like, hey, please don't drive here and try to do anything because it's not going to help. And you're just going to put more pressure on the system that's already failing. So it's communicating out there what kind of help is needed, what kind of help is not needed, and how can we get it to the right place. And I think what's interesting is a lot of this work, you know, if we had to build this community right now, that'd be really hard to do. But there's a lot of work that went into that ahead of time, which I think as people get more disconnected, they get lonelier. You've got entrepreneurs out there who are kind of fighting this daily battle, a lot of them in their own homes. It really highlights the impact and importance of community and why it's so important to build that now as opposed to when a situation arises.
Yeah, if you wait till you need it, you know, these things, they don't magically spring up overnight. The infrastructure has to be there. And so it's about, you know, so much of audience building, community building, and entrepreneurship is about, it's about having kind of longer term vision, not longer term vision, longer term time horizons, you know, understanding that the work I'm doing now is going to pay off in 2 to 3 years. So I might not see the immediate value, but that doesn't mean I'm doing the wrong thing. You have to understand what's going to create value long term. And you're right. Sorry, somehow I took the terrible tragedy of Helene and turned it into what you should do as an entrepreneur. But going back to the Helene stuff, right, is the, you know, the infrastructure is there, the communities are there, the tools, the platforms, and so that we can, you know, use them. I've heard, you know, incredible stories about how Eck or whatever, you know, is being used, you know, the value of this, you know, these kind of forums and these tools to check in with your loved ones, to help people. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. It's so important. And so, you know, talking about that and as our audience here is going to be thinking about these things in their own lives, right? How to build their own audiences, how to build their businesses. You know, if you were to help somebody start to build a community from scratch, if you were to build a community from scratch, day one, today, start trying to build your audience, what kind of things are working right now and what kind of things are not working right now? What would you recommend? What would be the playbook that you would give somebody and say, hey, do this and start this today?
Right. So the number one thing, and it always sounds so reductive, and so I hate to say it, but like the number one thing that I'm constantly working on with my clients and my students is post. If you don't put out content regularly, nothing else can absolutely nothing else can happen. And so you got all these people who they tend to, you know, they keep planning. I have clients who they're like, oh yeah, I've got like 10 pieces of content in the can. I'm like, okay, so why aren't we posting yet? It's not quite edited right, or I'm gonna start, you know, I've got this thing coming up, but then once that's out of the way, I'm like, okay, but like, you understand, you know, we're talking about something that you're gonna get value out of, that, you know, hopefully over the next 2 to 3 years. Which, you know, 2-3 years isn't a long amount of time, but when you're living it, it's a long amount of time. And so if you want that value 3 years from now, like, you need to get started now. And so post is so important. And there's so much trigger shyness to, you know, I'm saying post because I'm talking about it in this kind of social media context, but like the same is true, you know, you're building business, you're trying to sell things, right? Like, if you, you know, how many entrepreneurs have you met who are, they just keep tinkering with their product and they're not reaching out to try to sell anything to people. And if you don't actually reach out to try to get customers and sell them, you're not going to get customers.
Right. They don't actually talk to anybody. So I totally agree with that. Like, so get out there, start posting, talk to people, get out in front of people. It's going to feel weird. So what? You're going to learn. We're doing a podcast for the first time.
This is not a thought wave.
We're riding the thought wave right now. That's what we're doing.
Keep riding it.
I don't know what this is. It's a new form. Anyway.
We're going to create a new genre of multimedia banter.
Yeah. And on that topic, you keep using the word content. Okay, every time I hear the word content, I throw up a little bit. Just on the inside. I die a little bit on the inside.
Content.
Okay. Because it just feels like it feels kind of cheaper. It feels like throwaway stuff. It feels like, oh, we just got to produce this widget. Okay. Is that how we should be thinking about this, or should we be thinking about it in a different way? Is this the only way to think about it?
Wonderful question, Christopher. Wonderful question. Oh, I've got so many thought waves bubbling in my mind.
Oh my gosh,
they're overwhelming. Yeah, so actually, I was having this interesting conversation with this kid. I call him guy. I'm sure he's like 20, but kid. Who's this content producer that he was like in town for something or other, and he was meeting with my creator lab students, like my students here at Duke, who are all the creators. And you know, the key that I found myself explaining to him is, you know, kind of this history of content production, right? And how like the great poets were creating content, and Shakespeare's creating content, Homer's creating content. You're right, it does kind of cheapen it when we put it that way.
I would argue in their moment
it was content, and there was lots of people doing it, and the stuff that has survived has become the art. I wonder if art, in a lot of ways, the kind of modern perceptions of art, oh my gosh, the art community, which I've pissed off before online, is probably, if they hear this, they're going to come at me. But you know, our modern conceptions of art are a little wrong. You know, there's reasons artisans, you know, that was a job, it was a profession, and now we've really kind of put art on a pedestal in ways that I don't think historically it has been. But oh, please don't come at me, arts people.
I love art. Yeah,
arts are bad. But so I think the things that survive become the art, so to speak. But there was a lot more of it, right? Like, you have to understand, for every Emerson or Thoreau or Shelley or Eliot that you hear about, like, there were hundreds, thousands of other content creators, poets, writers, novelists who just didn't, who don't survive, who we don't talk about anymore. Just like now, right? There's, you know, there's a gajillion social media content creators. So that's one thought wave. Let me connect it to the original thought wave. Let's see if I can, I mean, I'm gonna jump from one. Can we like surf thought? Can we jump from one to another?
Yeah.
But as I was talking to this young man, it occurred to me, or not a new thought, but like the way I started explaining to him, was the real technology here is it's not content. It's narrative. Storytelling, the fundamental technology of humans, of our ability to be successful as a species, is storytelling. And what we do is we have all these different technologies that come along and help us tell stories in different ways. And even this medium that we got right now, like, this is functionally storytelling. The technology here, I think the thing that uncheapens it is thinking about it as storytelling. And content creators should be maybe referred to as storytellers. And maybe if we start calling things stories, that would be a good framing. I don't know. I'm just throwing
it out there. I like that idea. I mean, you know, if you look at Instagram, right? They have a feature of stories.
Sure, yeah, that was a great
point. So they have landed on the same idea that you have. Okay, so we're talking about going back to like building community in the context of what, in the context of entrepreneurship, in the context of audience building. So if you were to build a community today, one thing that I heard you say is you would just encourage people to start posting every day. Totally makes sense. But give us the nuts and bolts. Like, what are the things that people are getting wrong? The thing that people can focus on, like, if they just focused on a couple of things, what would you have them focus on first? Like, is the story one of those things? Are there other things that are working for you that like let you hit this, you know, whatever 15 million view situation or whatever? Like, tell us a little bit more about what you would recommend in this situation.
Gosh. And you know, this is something I'm gonna break the fourth wall here, and I know this is where you and I always you want like this, give me that tactical thing.
Yeah.
And then I'm the humanist, you know, real English professor who's like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of complex, but I'm gonna go wishy-washy, and let me see if I can get to something specific that can make you happy. But you know, the reason I say you gotta post, right, is you have to post because that's what gives you the data, right? That's what gives you the information of what works and what doesn't. Because the worst thing someone like me could do is come and say, hey, here's the thing that you should put, because that's if I could get that right for you, which I can't. Like, I don't know what's going to work. You don't know. That's how we got to figure it out. But then, like, it might work for you today, but is it going to work for you tomorrow or, you know, next week or next month, right? So it's about learning what works and learning how to gauge what is working, right? These platforms are so dynamic. They're changing all the time. And, you know, and so it's like this is fundamentally content creation. It is entrepreneurship. And so these are all fundamental principles of building companies, running companies, managing companies, you've got to have your data sources well-tuned. You got got to be tracking it, and you got to be learning from it. So the reason you're posting and the reason I love social media is because, you know, these things, these cell phones, I'm holding up a cell phone for anyone just listening and not watching the video stream. They're truth machines. If you put out something, or I guess here's the problem. And, you know, it's the same thing that happens with my entrepreneurs. When a young entrepreneur comes to me and says, hey, you know, here's my idea. What do you think of it? The first thing I say back to them is, I'm not going to tell you what I think of it, because what I think doesn't matter. I'm a data point of one. I'm a statistically insignificant data point. And so whether or not I think your idea is good or bad, right, that's not helpful. And I don't want to, because you might think I know something, you might actually weigh my opinion too much. So the same thing happens with content, right? If you come to me and say, like, what do you think of this idea? It's like, I might not like, but I might not be your audience. But the cool thing about these platforms, these social media platforms, right, is they are truth machines. So if you put something out there and it gets, you know, 200 views and that's it, it was bad content. It wasn't good. It was these platforms, the real people telling you it wasn't good. And if it gets, you know, 2 million views, it's these people, real people telling you they liked it. And it's not for me to look and be like, gosh, I can't believe people liked that thing that got 2 million views. No, we have to say, clearly that worked because people liked it. And so what we have to do, just entrepreneurs in general, I find there's this tendency to assume that they can just figure out what's right on their own, or they can ask someone who's just smart about this stuff. And the most important thing is, like, put out stuff into the world and let the world actually tell you. And then, so let's get tactical. So then you got to learn. And what I love about social media as an entrepreneurial platform, as opposed to, you know, creating a B2B SaaS business, is that it gives you so much data. It just dumps it for you. With B2B SaaS, you have to really be intentional about setting up the structure so you can collect data. And it takes a really long time to get kind of statistically useful data. But on a social media post, right, if you post every day for a week on a brand new account, you're gonna have an overwhelming amount of data that you can learn from. And so the things you want to look for is, you know, you, let's say Instagram Reels, right? You set it up so you have what's called a business account or a professional account, I think is the word off the top of my head. I forget which one it is. You have a professional account, and so it gives you all this data. And you look at the data on it, and you can see things like, you know, how many views has this post gotten, how many interactions has this post gotten, how many the average watch time is a key metric, right? Because these platforms want to keep users on as long as possible. So if you have a video that has great average watch time, it's going to show it to a bunch of people because it wants more people staying on these platforms. And so you're going to look at this data, and then you're going to have to do a little critical thinking. Nobody likes to critical think, but that's the key. This is the analysis. You can say, okay, look, and so what I always encourage my creators to do is look at, you know, a piece of content that did really well or relatively well and one that did worse, and say, okay, what's different? Let's compare and contrast. What's different about this one? What's, you know, what do I do here that I didn't do here, and vice versa? Okay, based on that learning, let me create another piece of content and do the same thing that I think worked well. And if it does it again, now you've learned something. Now you got a data point. Say, okay, this is a technique. This is a way to frame something.
Super interesting. Okay, so basically what we're saying here is, all right, start posting. The reason you want to start posting is because you want to make sure that you're getting enough out there to get some real signal, some real data about what's working, what's not working. Are there components that you have found tend to work better more often than others? And I'm thinking, you know, story arcs or different formats or whatever that you've experimented with that you say, wow, like, this is really working right now. Because I know LinkedIn is giving away lots of impressions to people who are posting videos right now. And so it's really important to make sure that you're posting video on that platform, because it's like the Wild West currently as of, you know, October 2024. So tell us, like, what if you were to have somebody put together a LinkedIn video today, what components would you have them focus on?
Yeah, it's crazy what's happened on LinkedIn, right? So LinkedIn, yeah, for those maybe listening who don't know, right? So LinkedIn is having a moment. It's it's basically trying to get more people doing video, and so they recently released basically, you know, what you see with TikTok or Reels is, yeah, you just kind of this, like, there's a video shows up and you're scrolling, right? And you know, scroll the next one. And so what's so important about that is LinkedIn has traditionally had terrible discoverability. And so if you posted a piece of your content on LinkedIn, the only real discoverability on LinkedIn was if someone like commented on your post, then it would like show up in their feed. And that was kind of about it. So you're very kind of limited to your network of people and then who commented and then their network. So it's very kind of small discoverability versus TikTok. You just post something and then the algorithm just starts showing it to random people it thinks is going to like it. And if people seem to like it, it just shows it to more and more people. So it's just amazing discoverability. And so LinkedIn now is trying to get more videos. And so it's created kind of that feature. And so if you post a video to LinkedIn now, like I have one that's, it just crossed the 3 million view mark on LinkedIn. That's wild. Like I don't think before any of this happened I would have ever had more than a few thousand, like 3 million on LinkedIn is bananas. And so it's a goal, like happens so rarely that platforms just give away traffic. So if you're listening to this, like go LinkedIn video, now is the time. So what do you do?
Like the working components, if you're like just focus on getting these things right, what would you have people try to get right in that video?
So the most important thing, of course, is you still need that great hook. I mean, that that hook is just so critical. So the hook being the first 2 seconds of your post. And think about it, I actually contextualize in terms of a title because people understand that, right? So if there's an article and the title is what tells you whether or not you're going to click it to go read it, and if nobody ever clicks it, they're never going to it's physically impossible for them to read it if they never click it. So the hook in a video is the same thing as your first 2 seconds. If people don't go, "Ooh, I want to hear more," if they just scroll right by it, we make that decision very quickly, then nobody's ever going to get to watch the rest of your video. So you got to have something compelling. What is a good hook? I should probably do 20 episodes on what a good hook is. Sure. But just think about what's going to, the phrase I like to use is tickle the amygdala. I don't know why, it just sounds cool. The amygdala is the little part in the back of your head. It's the lizard brain, and that makes the vast majority of your decisions in a day. And basically, we run on kind of on autopilot about a lot of things, and biologically it's necessary. You don't want to think about having to breathe every second of the day. That would be awkward. And even driving, right? You don't really think about driving. You just do a lot of things manually. And then what happens is the amygdala, when it notices something that it maybe needs to put up to higher order thinking, it kind of shoves it up and says, "Hey, let's give some more brain cells to this." And so social media content is doing the same. People are on their phones and they're just scroll. And if it catches their attention, that hook, then it tickles the amygdala. The amygdala says, "Ooh, let's elevate this to higher order brain processing." And that's where, that's why thirst traps are. Do you know what a thirst trap is, Chris?
I have heard. Yep.
Are you good at thirst traps, Chris?
I've been working out to make sure that mine are extra trappy. I think that's the word.
Is that? I don't know.
Extra trappy.
It should be.
I'm extra trappy right now. During the holidays, I get less trappy, but then I, usually in the spring and summer, I get more trappy.
You're always trappy. Good with it. So the thirst trap, right? Like, ooh, here's, shirtless guy, pretty girl in a bikini, whatever it is. And then our lizard brain goes, ooh, and it elevates it into the higher order thinking. And on LinkedIn, you're probably gonna have less of that. I don't know. Who knows where it's going to go, but it's what's going to be interesting. And so, how do you, fundamentally, again, content creation is entrepreneurship, solving problems, right? So you've got a bunch of business people on this platform, thinking about their, they're looking for business information, opportunities, connections. So if I'm creating LinkedIn content, it's how do I tell someone in the first 2 seconds of this video that I'm going to solve a business problem for you? Watch this and you're gonna have a business problem solved.
This goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, and we were kind of joking about, but what's closest to the money for that person? Like that really is a interesting hook. Like that's kind of a metaphor, right? What's closest to the money? It matters. What matters is that it's something that is the most important to that person that you're talking to.
It's value. Everything value. Is value. Value, yeah. Value, value. Like I think that the difference between great entrepreneurs and bad entrepreneurs, great creators, bad creators is, it's, are you doing for yourself? Are you doing for the other people out there? And, entrepreneurship is fundamentally, everyone thinks entrepreneurship is like a selfish thing or content creation is a selfish thing, but it's actually wildly wrong. If you're selfish as an entrepreneur or creator, you are going to create no value for anyone and you're not going to get anywhere.
That is beautiful. I mean, so the secret to great content creation, people are seeing people out there doing selfies and things like that. But what the secret really is, selfless content is the content that does the best. Selfless content usually is content that is giving away value for free. I know a lot of the folks that we talk to who are consultants and business owners and are in more of the knowledge industries, they tend to really worry about giving away their secret sauce, their recipes, to being great and to achieving some goal in your business, when in the reality, that's how you build trust with people. That's how you showcase your own value. It's by giving value away to others. And I think that's just beautiful that the world works that way. That's what actually helps.
100%. So true. You're right. It speaks to kind of what we were talking about earlier with social media, right? There's so much good. It's community. Like helping people, you know, really what's happening to those, like those knowledge creators who actually do, you know, quote unquote, give away their secrets of knowledge, things that people pay them for. So it turns out people will still pay them. It's almost like they're paying them as a thank you for all the great work they've already done instead of paying them just to get access to it. You know, and it actually, when you stop to think about it, it makes much more sense because, well, you don't know if you don't know that you're actually getting anything of value, you're going to be hesitant to pay. But if you know you've already got amazing value, well, then you're happy to say, you know, thank you so much for that value. Here's a reward for that. And you know, and so think about it, a musician is a great example, right? Like I know Taylor Swift songs, but you know, I still might go to the Eras tour. I'm not gonna go, my kids would be so mad if I went to the Eras tour without them. But there's all these people going to the Eras tour. Well, they all know her song. I mean, they stand there in the concerts and they sing her song. So clearly they know the song. So why the heck are they going? Well, it's like a thank you. It's like, you've provided me so much value and now I'm going to come here and celebrate with you and get to do it again because I love the value you're creating for me.
That's such an interesting way to think about it. I love that. And so really at the end of the day, content is about consistency. It's about hooking people's attention quickly, and it's about delivering real tangible value. So like one super tactical thing that you can do is when you go and film a video or piece of content is to rewatch it and be like, hey, am I getting anything like truly valuable out of this, and am I getting it quickly enough? I think that to me is an interesting way to look at that, and to send it to somebody else to say, hey, are you getting enough value out of this? Is this a nugget that is interesting enough to put out into the world? That seems like a good way to, at least a good filter through which to put your content so you know, hey, I think this is probably going to be good enough.
That's a great point. I love that. Now it makes me think I want to go back and watch everything we just recorded. Did we do anything valuable here? So I pulled these up because I was prepared to start with these. I want dad jokes. I got a dad joke for you, Christopher.
Oh no.
They're really good.
Let me
this is how we're going to create value. If we're going to create any value, it's going to be here. You ready for some of these?
At least you're going to get a dad joke out of this.
You get ready for it. okay. Oh my gosh. Why does a chicken coop only have two doors, Chris? Because if it had four, it would be a sedan. Oh gosh, wait. Sorry, I got more. I was gonna tell a sodium joke, but then I thought, nah.
Because of the NA.
It's NA, right? NA. Like,
yeah,
it's
a little chemistry minor here. Yeah.
What's the easiest building to lift? A lighthouse. Get it?
Wow.
Are you sure you get it?
Wow. You understand it? God, this was epic.
Value.
This was
audience.
Value.
There you go. You're value. Welcome.
Yeah,
you
are. Somebody will laugh.
They are laughing at us, not with us. As long as we're clear about that.
That's okay. Well, Dr. Dinnan, this was great. Thank you to the audience for joining us for our first episode of Thought Wave. Oh man, we'll see this title.
Where did that name come from?
I don't know. Yeah, this is kind of like our anti-corporate speak, title, where it's like, we're going to get out of business, or we're going to get out of bingo card next time. So everybody bring your bingo cards next time. Make sure you have all the corporate words. Maybe we'll put one out there and you can cross them off. And if we hit a bingo, like, we're doing something wrong here. All right. So yell at us.
I hope 5-10 years from now, the success in this world will be like 5-10 years from now, like ThoughtWave has become part of like corporate business culture in like a very serious term. Right. Hold on, everyone. Bring 10 ThoughtWaves to the meeting.
Yeah. We're not brainstorming anymore. We're thought waving.
We're thought waving.
We're riding thought waves. Here we go. all right. Well, thank you, everyone. Be sure to tune in, like, subscribe, wherever you're listening to or watching this podcast. And I hope that you came away with some tips, tricks, and hacks for those of you who are entrepreneurs, audience builders, and people who just want to do shit. Thank you for listening.